Well, this morning, our message comes from our gospel reading. And the sermon title, as you can see, is Not a Servant. And you may be tired of me talking about the evils of dualistic or binary thinking, but you're going to get it again today. And this, of course, comes from a lot of things. It comes from, most of an adult lifetime trying to pay careful attention to language and what it means and how it affects us, and we were talking about that last week. And this renewed awareness or a heightened awareness of the dangers of dualistic, of either-or thinking, has been brought home to me again as I've been very much enjoying a daily meditation provided by Father Richard Rohr, who's a, he's a Franciscan monk. Does things online, a very interesting thinker, and very deeply devoted to our God and what it means to follow him. And he's been reminding me again, without writing these just for me, of how easy it is for us to fall into the notion that things are either one thing or another. And it's problematic because frequently it is true. I mean, either you're here today or you're somewhere else. I mean, there's no middle ground there. Either you are, you're awake or you're asleep. Let's leave the half-asleep bits of it out of the way. I mean, you're one or the other in many things. But the problem with thinking that everything is either or is that often we apply it in places that it doesn't really fit, or we get the or wrong, which seems sort of odd. I mean, either you're awake or you're asleep. It's not you're awake or you're a puppy. I mean, it's not that. But there are other areas where it's a little more confusing. And in John's Gospel, Jesus talks frequently about what it means to be a servant, what it means to be a follower. And in our culture, no one really likes the idea of being a servant. And no matter how many times you watch Downton Abbey, or how much you enjoy reading Jeeves and Wooster stories from P.G. Woodhouse, you don't want to be a servant. We don't like the idea of being a servant. And so, of course, for us, we've moved in other directions. Most of us aren't that way. And when we think of this, when we're forced into this whole idea of servant, and we say, well, we don't want to be one of those, if somebody asks us, what do you want to be, our first response is almost certainly going to be a master. You're a servant or a master. You know, Jesus talks about how the servants don't know what the master means and all that. And there's nothing particularly wrong with that. But if we think that the opposite of a servant is a master and that's all, we're really going to misunderstand a lot of important things that Jesus has to say. Because in Jesus, and in his words and in his world, the opposite of a servant isn't a master. The opposite of a servant is a friend. And we think of that, and if we are looking at sort of jamming in the notion of friendship into our binary of servant-master, I think we're going to misunderstand what's going on in there. Because what Jesus is saying, not that master is the opposite of servant, he's sort of pulling us out of this whole idea of saying that stop, or he's telling us, stop limiting yourself into what your options are. Because back in that context, there was a very strong tradition of followers who behaved very much like servants. In a very real sense, the followers of a particular rabbi took care of the rabbi in a way that a servant might. And it's easy for us to fall into that thinking as well, even now, when that's not really the way it works for Jesus. He says that the difference between a servant and what he wants isn't that you will now start telling people what to do, or that you will become as he is in the sense of knowing everything that needs to happen. He's saying, no, I don't want you to be a servant. I don't want you to do what I tell you to do. I want you to be a friend and do what you know is right, because that's what we do with friends. Jesus often talks about how a servant doesn't really know what the master wants. A servant just does what they're told. That's what they're supposed to do. They're not really supposed to think for themselves. Friends are different. We expect our friends to think for themselves. And we expect our friends to be in a relationship with us that isn't characterized by either side telling the other one what to do. I mean, when you're building a deck with a friend of yours, you expect your friend to say, well, I want the deck to look like this. You don't take over. But when the two of you are just enjoying a conversation, when you're trying to decide where to go for coffee, it's not that one always decides and the other just acquiesces, because that's the nature of the relationship. You think together. You work together. A servant works for a master. A servant doesn't work with a master. When we are building that deck with our friends, we work together. We perhaps work longer than we would otherwise. We probably don't insist on the same kind of breaks and such things. And we certainly don't expect to be paid. Jesus calls us to be friends. And he says in John 15, I no longer call you servants, because a servant does not know his master's business. And if I can interject, the servant just knows what they're told to do, and they do it. Instead, I've called you friends, for everything that I learned from my Father, I have made known to you. Friends share with each other. They share what they've learned, the new things that they know. They share the joys and even the struggles that they have with each other. Friend is an extremely powerful word. It's got almost endless nuances. People will, if you ask somebody how many friends they have, and you should try this, it's interesting. Just ask people, how many friends do you have? And see how many different kinds of answers you get. You're not trying to keep track. Some people tell you how many Facebook friends they have. And I don't want to dismiss Facebook. It's a wonderful thing. It's a way that I keep track of people that are too far away that, you know, you're not going to phone. But for me to suggest that those people are the same as the ones who are in my wedding party, I think does a bit of violence to both, really. The people that you're Facebook friends with aren't the kind of people that you call in the middle of a crisis. At least not all of them, because they're not the same. Some people, when you ask them how many friends they have, they'll tell you they only have one or two. Because for them, friendship means that closest relationship you have with someone that you may or may not be related to. When they think of friend, they think these are the people that I call when there's nothing, when I have no other options. Friends are the people who will do what you need them to do, without necessarily asking questions. Somebody once said, a true friend is a person who will help you bury the body without asking how you got it. I'm not quite sure I'd go that far. There's all kinds of things there. But you get the idea of what, like, a true friend is someone who just has loyalty to you, that you're in a relationship where you no longer have to demonstrate the value that you have to each other, because it's gone past all that. And there's everything in between. And Jesus calls us to be friends. And the friends he calls us to are closer to those lifelong friends, those friends with whom we can share anything, than Facebook friends. Jesus is saying, I call you friends because I've taught you everything I know. We're friends because we're now moving forward together, not in the sense that you're following me, and that if I don't tell you where to go, you'll just stand there because you don't know what to do. But rather, you'll do what you know I need you to do, because we're friends. When somebody calls you up in the middle of the night, who's a friend of yours, and tells you that a terrible thing has happened, you know what to do without them telling you. And it's different for everybody. When I called, after calling 911, I called my friend John to tell him that my house was on fire. He came over, not because he knew how to put out houses, but because he knew I needed someone there who I could cry on or shake my fist at the fire with, or whatever it might have been. He knew what to do. I didn't tell him to come over. But there's nothing he could have done that would have meant more to me. That's what friends are, and that's what we're called to be with Jesus. We're not called to be servants that we do what we're told to do. We're friends working together with him. And we do what needs to be done because he's told us. Now, this doesn't mean that we know everything that Jesus knows, and it doesn't mean that we do this without making the occasional mistake. When we're making that deck, and we're helping out, and we see that we're almost out of screws, we'll go get some more. If we don't know much about screws, we might bring the wrong kind back. That doesn't mean that we're suddenly not friends because we can't tell the difference between a treated deck screw and a greenish, yellowish-looking decorative screw. I've never done this, but it's certainly not out of the question that I could. You're doing what you know needs to be done, and sometimes we're going to make mistakes in there. And sometimes in our friendship with Jesus, we will make mistakes. But in the same way that servants who make mistakes might get fired, but friends never do, we know that the mistakes we make aren't the end of our relationship, because it's not the relationship of a master to a servant, an owner to a slave, an employer to an employee. It's the relationship of friendship. And we do the things that Jesus wants us to do because we're friends of his. In the same way that we do things for our friends, not because we owe them one, not because, well, if we don't do this thing, this friendship is so fragile it'll fall apart, but because after the length of the friendship, we want what's best for the other person, even as we know they want what's best for us. We don't want to be a servant, and we don't have to be a servant, and we're not called to be servants. Jesus says, I've taught you everything I learned so that you could do what I would do if I was there. That you would take care of people the same way I would if I was there. That you'll talk about my Father and about your friendship with me because it's important to you. Not because you're obliged in a strange sense, but because it's part of who you are. In some ways, this is more difficult. And if you ask anybody who's moving into, or not anybody, if you ask most people who are moving into their first significant relationship, they will often talk about how they wish this other person would tell them exactly what to do so they wouldn't make mistakes. On your first Mother's Day together, many husbands and fathers wish they knew exactly, now, is it flowers? Is it breakfast in bed? Is it brunch? Is it all of these? Is it none of these? Is it something altogether? And we want, in a very real sense, often we want to be told. But the relationship that means the most to us is one where we don't have to be told. And where whatever we do will meet with the expectations of the other person, not because it's exactly what they wanted, but because you're exactly what they wanted, and what you do is a good thing. Being a friend of Jesus doesn't guarantee that we'll never make mistakes. It doesn't guarantee that we will do exactly the right thing at all times. But what it does guarantee is that we will always be friends with Jesus. And that we're called to be the people we're called to be in relationship to that friendship. To enjoy his company even as he enjoys ours. The obligations of friendship are perhaps a little harder to define sometimes. They're often more demanding, more significant than the responsibilities of employment or some other things. But they're always so much more rewarding. I wouldn't want to be a servant to anyone. If I had to pick somebody, Jesus would be a good one, I suppose. But I don't like that feeling. That's just me. I don't put that for anyone else. And for me, the idea of not being told what to do, but being asked to come along and do what we all know needs to be done is so much more satisfying, is so much more significant to me. It demonstrates a level of trust that you may not have in servants. It gives me the responsibility and the right to do what I think makes the most sense. That when I'm acting like a friend of Jesus, it's not that I'm following a prescribed list. I'm pulling on a long relationship where I can legitimately think, I'm pretty sure this is the kind of thing that Jesus would do if he was here. So that's what I'm going to do. That's what friends do. Friends take care of your interests whether you're there to ask them to or not. Friends speak well of you whether it'll get back to you or not. Friends support you whether they understand exactly what you're doing or not. And friends are what we want. And Jesus has said he wants to be friends with us. And in fact, calls us friends. We're not servants. We're not doing what we're told to be done, what we're told to do. We're friends. We're all friends. Doing our best for a mutual friend. That's what we're doing here today in this group, and that's what we do when we're on our own, wherever we are. Being friends with Jesus is a pretty good thing. It's something I'm beginning to understand how little I understand. And in the same way that after a couple of dozen years of being married, I'm just continuing to see new things to learn about Heather, new ways to be in relationship with her. We have new ways of being friends with Jesus. So this day and every day, let's remember that. That it's about friendship, not about rules. It's about being together rather than doing what we're told. Because that's what friends do. Amen.